Now, I suppose we've always known that our health is influenced by the environment in which we live, which is why retirees like to move to warmer climates. It's often a healthy alternative, certainly better for the arthritis. But what about human health and environmental change, or more specifically, the link between our well-being as a species and the Earth's biodiversity? Our next guest has a simple and direct message that our health is inseparable from that of the living world. Dr. Erin Bernstein is a faculty member at the Centre for Health and the Global Environment at the Harvard Medical School, and he's a physician at the Boston Children's Hospital. He's in Australia to deliver a keynote address to the International Healthy Parks, Healthy People Congress, which is on all this week in Melbourne. Dr. Bernstein, welcome to Australia and Radio National Breakfast.
Thanks for having me. It's a pleasure to be with you.
Our health and the health of the planet, it's always been linked, but are you arguing that many people have forgotten the importance of that link?
I'm arguing that ultimately we must protect the health and welfare of the natural world if we are to protect our own. And that I think because so many of us have moved into cities and into places where we have made it impossible to see the connections that really underlie our health in so many ways that connect us to the natural world, that perhaps we have forgotten, because it's hard for us to see, for example, that our water here in Melbourne relies upon 157,000 acres of protected forest, or that the medicines we take are in fact largely still today derived from natural products. I very much believe that we have tremendous amount at stake for our own well-being when it comes to protecting nature.
How specifically do you say that the loss of biodiversity affects the prevalence, the location, and the transfer of certain diseases?
If you look at all human infectious diseases, so if you did just a listing of every single infection of humans, you get a list of about 1,400. About 60% of those 60% of those infections have life cycles that lead them to infect other species as well. Now, it's interesting, if you look at so-called emerging infectious diseases, these are diseases that are entirely new, such as SARS, which came out in about 2002, and old diseases like malaria, tuberculosis, that are rapidly increasing in spread. Fully 75% of those are diseases that have life cycles outside humans. And I don't think that's by accident. I think the fact that we're seeing more emerging infections, and this includes H1N1, the recent influenza pandemic, the reason that we're seeing more of those as these infections that come from other species is because, in fact, the scale and magnitude of our engagement with nature is unprecedented. And so as we change ecosystems and disrupt biodiversity, we in fact change the way these infections may enter into the human population.
I suppose it's just a little bit contradictory there. So you're saying in some ways it's engagement with the natural world in different ways that's causing a problem rather than withdrawal from the natural world.
Well, it's really that the changes to the way humanity has engaged nature over the past century are really extraordinary. I mean, for example, we've cleared probably a third of the world's forests in the last 50 years, and what that's done to a certain extent is concentrate wild populations. Now, if you were in charge of protecting humanity against H1N1, the last thing you would want to do is take one sick person and put them in a crammed room with 100 other healthy people to prevent the spread of the infection. And yet that's exactly what we've been doing with wild species. We've been concentrating their populations such that if there's one animal that has an infection, it's ever more likely that they'll spread it to others. And so the consequences of our actions towards nature, in fact, in some ways have gone unforeseen in the way that we may be affecting the health of other species that in turn come back to affect us.
In terms of specific hotspots, are there areas in particular that you would like to alert us to in terms of loss of biodiversity? I suppose I was thinking of places like the Amazon, which is what we hear about, but I know it's much more widely spread than that.
Of course.
Where do you like to alert people to an area that they may not have considered?
I'd like to alert people to the biodiversity that's living all around them. I think that, as I mentioned, in our daily lives, we depend a tremendous amount upon nature's services for our water, for air quality. In fact, many forests serve as tremendous buffers of air pollution in cities, for the food we eat. And I think there's a tendency for us to believe, particularly those of us living in the developed world, that biodiversity is somewhere else, that it's in the Amazon or it's in a rainforest in Southeast Asia. And while that's true, in fact, some of the biodiversity, in fact, a lot of the biodiversity that's the most important to our own well-being is right around us. And I think that we need to really change how we think about biodiversity if we're going to do what's necessary to protect it.
Now, you teach a course at Harvard on the human health implications of global environmental change. And
right.
In some ways, there's a contradiction here because modern medicine has made us healthier than ever. I mean, we're certainly living longer, at least in the developed world. How do you dovetail that with a story about going backwards because of environmental change?
That's an excellent question, because I think even among researchers who do all of this wonderful work that has made our livelihood so much better, there's a misperception that their work doesn't depend upon biodiversity as well. So it turns out that most advances in science, even today, are harnessing elements of biodiversity for their work. And one wonderful example of this is a molecular biology technique known as the polymerase chain reaction, or PCR for short. This is the thing that's used on all of those crime shows where they're trying to figure out who the criminal is, and they get a hair sample, and from that hair sample they extract DNA, and they make, you know, millions of copies of that DNA, and the way they do that is through PCR. Well, PCR relies upon an enzyme isolated from a bacteria known as Thermus aquaticus, and what's remarkable about this bacteria is that it loves to live at about 70 or so degrees Celsius, which would, of course, cook most of us. But this bacteria thrives, and it was discovered in a national park. In fact, it was discovered in the world's first national park. It was discovered in Mushroom Spring in Yellowstone in the United States. And the example of Thermus aquaticus and the enzyme that it uses to replicate DNA is, in fact, an example of one among many. There are hundreds of other species that have contributed their unique adaptations to the advancement of science, and we rely upon them every day for all of these breakthroughs that you hear about in the news. So biodiversity remains a critically important part to the biomedical research enterprise.
I noticed in something I read about you that in a Q&A that you did with someone, that you were actually inviting, unless I got it wrong, you're inviting people, say parents, when a child gets sick and comes to you in your clinical work, says, what could have got us to this? How did my child get sick? You're inviting people to really think hard about what has caused their child's illness. And I just detected that you're quite happy if people sort of did engage in the blame game. You know, if people had to look at the sort of amount of toxins in the air, well, that suits your purpose of trying to alert people to a new sensibility. Am I right there?
Well, I think it's a little, I'd like to engage people in the thought that in order to understand a lot of the illness of children, we need to think a little more deeply than what might immediately be apparent, because if ultimately we want to prevent disease, we need to understand its root cause. And in many ways, when we look at diseases of childhood, be it asthma or allergies, certain infections, really, you have to understand something about ecology and biodiversity to get at them. One way in particular that I can give an example of for childhood illness are certain kinds of skin infections, which are quite common in children. The most common bacteria that causes skin infections is a bacteria called Staphylococcus aureus. As many of your listeners may know, we are now suffering under an epidemic of resistant Staphylococcus aureus. So this bacteria is developed resistant to multiple different antibiotics, including penicillin and multiple further generations. Now, why is that? And I think we need to think hard about that. One reason is that we've been foolish when it comes to using antibiotics, that we've overprescribed antibiotics. But another reason is ecology. You see, bacteria behave under evolutionary pressure, just like all organisms. And when you give an antibiotic to a child, you're not, in fact, just treating the infection they may have, but, in fact, you're treating all of the bacteria on their body. And it turns out that Staphylococcus aureus lives on most people's skin and in their noses all the time. And so as a pediatrician, when I give antibiotics to a child for an ear infection, I have to recognize that, in fact, I'm not just treating the bacteria that are in the ear, but I'm treating all the bacteria of the body. And that if I'm misdirecting my antibiotics, I could, in fact, be cultivating resistance in bacteria that may later cause, for example, a skin infection. And that these infections, which used to be very easy to treat, have become much more difficult.
Very interesting. Thank you for joining us.
A pleasure. Thanks again for having me.
I hope you enjoy Australia. That's Dr. Aaron Bernstein, a physician and research associate at the Harvard Medical School. He's a world authority on the human health implications of global environmental change, and he'll be delivering a keynote address this coming Thursday at the International Healthy Parks, Healthy People Congress in Melbourne. It's 7:14.